world's becoming a dangerous place for us women. Lipstick Bodyguard looks just like an innocent little lipstick, but it'll instantly drop any attacker to his knees so you can get away unharmed. Lipstick Bodyguard, fear no evil. Get yours today, only at lipstickbodyguard.com.
Accurate diagnosis and successful treatment hinge on clear communication between a patient and their doctor. Unfortunately, for many elderly, here's where it all breaks down. This week, Diane shares her method for gathering and communicating the critical information your doctor needs to make the most of your parents' next visit.
Welcome to Parents Are Hard to Raise, helping families grow older together without losing their minds. I'm elder care expert Diane Berardi. I was called into a family conference this week by a physician and a patient and his two daughters. Everybody wanted to talk about, you know, his care after leaving the hospital. And so the doctor, the two daughters, and there was a discharge planner also as well. We were all sitting in the room around a conference table. And the patient was in a wheelchair by the window. And so the daughter started talking. And I said, wait a minute, you know, this conversation's about Ken. Ken, you know, come over here. Ken's sitting by the window, you know, away from us. I said, Ken, come on over. So Ken looked at me and he said, well, why? And I said, because this is about you and what you want and what's going to happen when you get home. And we have to see, you know, we have to find out what you want and see if we can make that happen, if that's possible. And he said to me, I really don't need to sit there and tell you what I think. He said, because they're just going to make the decision for me. And I said, no, of course you do. So he looked at me like I'm out of my mind and said, my daughters are just going to do what they want me to do. So I'm sitting here by this window. They've been planning my life since I got sick. You know, and I looked at him and I felt really bad, and he's got a valid point. And we sometimes, you know, we do that to our parents and we don't even realize it. We think we know what's best for them, and maybe we do, you know, or maybe they're not agreeable to what we want. We don't include them in these situations. And sometimes we don't even realize it, but we decide what's best for them because it's best for us. It helps us more than them. So, you know, it's something for us to all think about. I've been around that same table, you know, where the doctor's talking and the family and about, you know, mom going home, potential treatments, etc. And then the doctor pauses and, you know, looks at mom and says to her, now, what do you want to do? You know, what do you think? Because mom isn't saying anything. And so mom looks at her daughters, looks at the doctor, looks at me and whispers, I don't think he knows what he's doing. He's asking me what I want to do. So as you always hear me say, you know, it depends on your parent, the individual. You know them best. So some want to be active and accountable for their decisions, and some want the doctor or the social worker or their children to tell them what to do. But I really think we have to give our parents that, we have to allow them that engagement, that participation. They have to be active in their care, not only in their care, you know, but in their diagnosis process, because they're the experts on their bodies. They're the ones living with themselves. And then on the care, where to get the care, you know, what doctor to go to. We can offer support, you know, help them, look up things for them, you know, depending on what they need from us. But they, if they understand their diagnosis or the treatment or the options, you know, they know what's best for them and what's suitable for them. So they have to be central to, you know, participating in that, in the care. So what I want to do is say to you, well, how do we prepare them to do that? Well, when they go to a doctor, we want to make sure that they're telling the doctor what the doctor does need to know. So how do we do that? Well, first thing we have to do is they have to feel comfortable. Your parents have to feel comfortable in communicating with their doctor. So they have to be comfortable with their doctor. You know, not all doctors want patients to be participatory or, you know, to have input. Some patients just want the doctor to tell them, and some doctors don't want the patients coming in with reams of paper, you know, that they get from the internet and all these questions and taking up hours of their time. You know, you have people coming in with boxes of, you know, paperwork. So we have to also be careful if we go to the doctor with our parent. You know, a lot of times the doctor will look at us and will talk to us, and we allow them to do that, and your mom or dad just kind of sits in the background. And your mom and dad is capable of saying, you know, what's happening or giving their input, but the doctor kind of looks at us because I think, you know, sometimes they think, well, we can give them quick responses, or we know, we understand better, or we hear better, etc. So we completely leave our parents out of the mix. So the communication between our parent and the doctor has to be good. And whenever I'm teaching, I always say to people, you know, what is good communication? And I always have, you know, some students saying, well, it's two people talking. Communication is not about two people talking or arguing or advising or interrupting or reassuring or critiquing or diagnosing. You know, there's a listening component. That's the most important part in communication, that someone has to be listening. And that is the key. So the doctor has to be listening, and your parent has to be listening. You know, hearing is a physical ability. Listening is a skill. So listening is not passive, it's active. You know, a lot of times your parent feels maybe the doctor is rushed, or they're embarrassed to tell the doctor something, so they don't tell them everything. Or the doctor is kind of, you know, writing everything down. Maybe your parent feels he's not listening, and the doctor's thinking, this is all extraneous information, I don't need it. So, or sometimes, I know sometimes, you know, I see it with my mom and dad. After the first three words the doctor says, he's talking way over their heads, and they don't understand what he's saying, and they're not going to question him, and they're not going to say, you know, I don't understand that, or what is that word, you know. Or the doctor, you know, doesn't know your parent that well. Your parent can't hear. You know, maybe the doctor's looking down, and he's writing or doing something, and he's not looking at your mom and dad, speaking to them so that they can, you know, a lot of elderly people, they're reading his lips. They don't hear well, or he's not speaking up. So they have to be comfortable with their doctor. If your parent doesn't have that emotional connection with their doctor, they're going to feel unheard or neglected and less likely to contribute information, which could be crucial to their diagnosis, to a proper diagnosis, to the right diagnosis. And that's with any healthcare professional. I had a visiting nurse call me the other day. I had seen one of her patients the day before, and she called me and she said, you know, did you see Rose yesterday? And I said, yeah, I did. And she said, well, how was she to you? And I said, she was the same. You know, she's the same as she always was. She goes, was she feeling okay? I said, yeah, she was fine. She didn't mention anything. She was normal to me, you know. So she said, because she keeps canceling her physical therapy appointment. The physical therapist comes to the home. She keeps calling up and saying she doesn't feel good. She doesn't want him to come. And I said to the nurse, well, that's because she doesn't like the physical therapist. I said, she did mention that to me yesterday. I said, and I told her, you know, to tell you that. She doesn't feel comfortable with him. She doesn't like him. So what does she do? You know, she's canceling. She's saying, I don't feel good, and she's canceling. It's not because she doesn't feel well, but see how it all gets mixed up and the cycle goes on and mom doesn't get the therapy she needs. So she might, number one, not feel comfortable with the nurse, or number two, not feel comfortable with the physical therapist. So these are things we have to look for. So if they are comfortable and the doctor is listening, everything works better, because our parents do expect people in the healthcare community to be compassionate and to be empathetic. And you know, our parents have real emotions and that motivates their thinking. And, you know, we always leave out that human component. That's the last thing we think about is, you know, we have a human being here with, you know, feelings and likes and dislikes. And, you know, it's not just a body and a diagnosis. There's a lot of other things going on in there. So we have to all remember that, you know. So, you know, think of mom being overweight and she's a borderline diabetic and you're in the doctor's office and the doctor's saying to her, you have to exercise, you have to eat better, no more sweets, no more ice cream, you know. And mom, and the doctor, first of all, is 200 pounds overweight. Okay, and then mom is looking at him and she's agreeing and she's going, yes, thank you, doctor. And mom and the doctor's thinking, good, you know, she's going to do that and we're going to change her lifestyle and this is what she needs to do. And mom is getting out of the doctor's office and mom is thinking, I'm not going back to that doctor anymore, you know, he doesn't understand me, I'm not doing it. So, you know, a lot of times, and not all doctors, but, you know, doctors, they ask a lot of our parents as patients because we forget that they're human. We're expecting mom to make a lot of lifestyle changes at 80 years old. And she's grappling with the realities of diabetes, a disease. She's borderline. Does she understand that? Does she understand what's going on? Does she understand her possible diagnosis? We're asking a lot of her. We're asking her to modify her behavior. That's challenging for any of us. You know, I mean, if someone told me you got to stop eating ice cream. Well, how can you do that? You know, mom is 81. The doctor isn't taking into account, you know, her culture, her family, her day-to-day life. So, you know, I say to people, you know, if the doctor does say something like that, I'll say to her, well, ask your doctor, can I have ice cream once a week? You know, what do you mean I can never have ice cream again? You know, can I have it once a week? Is that gonna bother me? Because you can't give up ice cream the rest of your life. It's just not feasible. So this small little positive change, it may make mom listen to everything else and do whatever else she needs to do because she can still, you know, she doesn't have to drastically change everything. So if we can, you know, communicate better and get the doctor to understand a little better, and mom can communicate symptoms clearly, not only will it get the doctor's attention and, you know, he or she might listen, but it can help. It helps the doctor making an accurate diagnosis. So we want to prepare for a doctor's appointment. We want to improve mom and dad's storytelling ability by giving the doctor what he needs to know. Because the doctor doesn't want, he wants maybe a paragraph, not a novel, you know, so it's the quality of the information. So before the appointment, you know, there's a section, and I'm going to put this all on the website, there's a section that, you know, mom and dad can prepare at their leisure. So it gives them the time to remember things that might be important to their diagnosis and their treatment. And it gives the doctor the information he or she needs to know. And it gives your parent the time to think about what they want to know from their doctor. So they're prepared when they go in. I always tell people two questions, you know, before you go in. What do I want to talk to my doctor about? Aside from giving him, he or she, all the, you know, pertinent information about me, what do I want to discuss with him? And what are my most important medical concerns? I want to tell you about my friend Katie. Katie is a nurse, and she was attacked on her way home from work. She was totally taken by surprise, and although Katie is only 5 feet tall and 106 pounds, she was easily able to drop her 6'4", 250-pound attacker to his knees and get away unharmed. Katie wasn't just lucky that day. She was prepared. In her pocketbook, a harmless-looking lipstick, which really contained a powerful man-stopping aerosol propellant. It's not like it was in our grandmother's day. Today, just going to and from work or to the mall can have tragic consequences. The FBI says a violent crime is committed every 15 seconds in the United States, and a forcible rape happens every 5 minutes. And chances are, when something happens, no one will be around to help. It looks just like a lipstick, so no one will suspect a thing. which is important since experts say getting the jump on your attacker is all about the element of surprise. Inside this innocent-looking lipstick is the same powerful stuff used by police and the military to disarm even the most powerful armed aggressor. In fact, National Park Rangers use the very same formula that's inside this little lipstick to stop 2,000-pound vicious grizzly bears dead in their tracks. It's like carrying a personal bodyguard with you, in your purse or your pocket. Darkness brings danger. Muggers and rapists use darkness to their advantage. We all know what it's like to be walking at night and hear footsteps coming at us from behind. Who's there? If it's somebody bad, will you be protected? Your life may depend on it. My friend Katie's close call needs to be a wake-up call for all of us, myself included. Pick up a lipstick bodyguard and keep it with you always.
Lipstick Bodyguard, fear no evil. Get yours today, only at lipstickbodyguard.com.
You better get yourself to the doctor, your head just ain't on right.
So we were talking about having our parents be engaged in their care, in their being participatory. So I have some forms on the website that you can have your, you know, fill out with your parents, have your parents fill out. And basically, you know, the first part is, of course, their medical history, surgeries, et cetera, past treatments, tests they've had, symptoms and pain. We have on there an actual, you know, figure front and back of a person so that they can, and you've done that in a doctor's office, they can mark where the pain is on the drawing, because that's important. And then, you know, next to that X, you know, what kind of pain is it? You know, dull, sharp, stabbing, does it radiate to another part of the body? They can draw an arrow to the second area. You know, just we want to be as explicit as we can to not only, you know, have them be engaged, but also it helps in the diagnosis, because a doctor will ask, well, what was the pain like? You know, doc, it's a pain. you know how it is when you've, so they don't really, you know, is it dull? Is it stabbing? You know, so we can have the right descriptions. You know, when did the pain start? There's, you know, another section. What were you doing when you first noticed the pain? You know, what do you think caused the pain? So there's a lot of different questions to ask, you know, about the particular symptom. Then, of course, their medications and supplements. So the doctor knows, you know, that they're not only taking, you know, three prescriptions, that they're taking all these supplements. So that gives them the time before the appointment. They write all this down. And then during the appointment, they want to know certain things. And I have some questions on there. You know, what does the doctor want me to do? You know, about their medications. Is this new prescription? There's nothing wrong with them asking you, is this new prescription necessary? You know, because, you know, your dad and mom might already be on 14 medications. You know, is this new one? You know, the doctor knows. Sometimes the doctor may not know, but they have it now, all the medication you're on, because if your parent has been, you know, to four different doctors for different things, they're going to be on a lot of different medication. So you have that list, you know, what is this medication for? How often do I take it? Are there going to be changes to my current medications? That happens a lot too. The doctor makes changes, they don't happen. They don't get the prescription refilled, and then they're still on the old medicine. So, you know, what is my diagnosis? Can you give me information on my diagnosis? Because, you know, okay, you know, you're the doctor says, okay, you know, you're a diabetic or you're a borderline diabetic. Well, what does that mean? You know, you want them to understand all that's involved in diabetes. I mean, on a level that they can understand. But maybe they have written material that they can give them, because, you know, our parents, they like to read, you know. They like to read and have paper in front of them. Tests, you know, well, can you explain the test you want me to have? You know, do I have to have any special instructions before the test? What if I don't have the test? You know, when can I get my results? That you always want a copy of those results for your medical file. That's very important. Treatment. Can you explain the treatment you want me to have? You know, can you give me written information on the treatment so they can get out, you know, go out, go home, internalize what happened? What are the risks of the treatment? What if I don't have the treatment? You know, what happens? And then do I have to see another doctor? Do I have to see another specialist? Do I have to make another appointment with you? When do I see you again? What do I do if I have a problem before my next appointment? You know, who do I call? And then when they get home, you know, what are the changes to their diet, their activity, their medications? There's a form on there about that. What symptoms or changes should I be aware of? You know, if I'm on a new medication, when should I call my doctor and for what changes? So I hope that will help them, you know, feel more in control and understand. And the doctor's going to say, wow, okay, they kind of, you know, they're not giving me all this extraneous information that really doesn't help. They're given more concise information that can lead to a proper diagnosis and the proper management of their care. Because if they understand what they have to do or, you know, all about the illness or what treatments, it just helps them. If they understand, you know, they're going to be more participatory in what they have to do to feel better. Or they can make the final call and decide, yeah, this is what I want to do. I am so happy that I'm getting, you know, we're getting so many emails, and I'm trying to talk to everyone about, you know, I'm trying to get as many emails in as I can during shows, because I'm sure the questions that people ask are questions that everyone has. So I received an email from Karen from Springfield, Illinois, and she asked, why won't my dad listen to me? And here's her email. I work full time and my dad recently moved in with us because he wasn't taking care of himself. He's a diabetic and he wasn't eating right, taking his medication properly, etc. It's, of course, been a challenge for myself and my family. I wish I had listened to your episode where you talked about how life changes when your parent moves in with you. We might have gone a different route than we did, because you really can't imagine the difference it makes in your life and your family's unless you experience it. Anyway, we got my dad on a schedule, and he's been okay staying at home because I have my cousin coming over part of the day and feeding him, etc. But then my dad developed an ulcer on his leg that he didn't mention to us, and by the time we knew he had it, it was infected. To make a long story short, the doctor says he has to, you know, take medication, he has to sit and keep his leg elevated, you know, as much as possible. But I come home from work and my cousin is sitting in front of the television, but my dad is up and about walking around. And my cousin says to me, he's been doing that all day. He just won't sit down with his leg up. So I start yelling at him and he yells at me, and then I feel guilty. And she says, how do I get him to listen to me? He was in the room when the doctor told us what he had to do. Well, we all struggle with this, so don't second guess your decision about having your dad move in with you, because that was the decision you made at that time, and you know, you felt that that was your option. And of course, you've already made adjustments, your family's already made adjustments, and you said things were going okay until this leg, you know, infection occurred. So, you know, don't feel bad about that. You're a kind daughter to do that, and your husband and family. You know, anxiety and guilt are the two words that I hear most often, you know, when I'm talking to children of aging parents, because we're constantly anxious about what's going on with our parents, what they're doing. Are they doing the right thing? Are we doing the right thing for them? And then we're guilty. We're guilty no matter what we do, or no matter what decisions we make. So, you know, I worry about women especially, because, you know, we seem to carry the load, you know, just because we're natural caregivers, natural caretakers, and we kind of just that's our function, you know, especially, you know, you're a parent yourself, you know, you want to take care of your parents, you take care of your family, your husband, your children. But, you know, we as women are twice as likely to suffer from depression as men, and stress is a big, you know, trigger. So how do we get dad to listen? Well, I mean, you know your dad, so when you're calm, you know, maybe if you can sit and talk to him, the first thing that comes to my mind is, well, was he involved in having your cousin come over, you know, to sit with him? You know, maybe if he was and he thought that would be okay, then that's good. If he wasn't, you know, you and your family might have thought, well, that's the perfect solution, and your cousin was willing to come over. And that's, you know, solution you would think, say, okay, well, that's good for dad. He'll feed him and he'll do everything. He'll make dad sit there, you know, with his leg up, and I can go to work and feel relaxed. But we have dad in the mix, you know, so maybe he doesn't like that cousin, or he just doesn't want someone coming there, you know. So If we didn't talk to him ahead of time, maybe he would be perfectly fine on his own sitting there with his leg up. He may do that. Maybe he's just like, maybe, you know, he doesn't want your cousin there. Maybe your cousin's annoying him, you know, and so he gets up. I mean, so these are things he has to be involved, you know, in the decision process. You know, if you sit down and talk to him and say, well, you know, if you talk to him and he wasn't involved and say, well, dad, you know, I have to go to work. I want to make sure, you know, you're sitting there with your leg up. You heard the doctor. If you do this for this short period of time, then you could go on and do, you know, what you normally did. But how do you want to handle it? How are we going to make sure that you're okay to do that? Well, I can just stay here by myself. But, you know, okay, so then you say, well, okay, but do you need help, you know, walking to the bathroom if he does? And he said, no, I can do that. Okay, you know, we can leave you food. I mean, you can come to some kind of decision that maybe he's involved in and maybe that he will accept. Maybe he doesn't mind your cousin coming, but maybe, you know, he doesn't want to sit there for 5 hours and watch television. You know, maybe it's the first hour of the day he does. Maybe your cousin, you know, they can play cards. He can engage him in some other activity, you know, that'll keep him sitting. You know, maybe he has friends who could come over and sit with him, play cards, etc. Sometimes if nothing works and he's, you know, he doesn't want to do that, or he says, I'm not going to do that, you know, I can sit, you know, you can try saying to him, listen, all right, let's for every hour sit 45 minutes of the hour, then get up. If you feel like you have to take a break, do that. If that doesn't work, you know, you find sometimes with all of us human beings, we may listen to a stranger sometimes before we'll listen to our spouse, our parent, our neighbor, our friend. You know, we may listen to someone else who's not in the mix. So you may have to hire a professional, you hire a service to come in. And because, for instance, if you hire someone and they come in and they'll stay with him, and you have, for instance, a home health aide, a nurse coming in and saying, okay, Joe, this is what you have to do. And she's going to tell him, this is it. This is what we have to do. If we do this for the next 2 weeks, you're good. You're golden. We go back to the doctor. You know, this is fine. This is what he said. Your leg's going to be healing, etc. But you have to listen to this person. And then let's say they bring a home health aide in. She's going to say, Joe, nope, you got to sit. And he's going to listen to her most likely because she is someone different. She's a stranger. And then she's going to say to him, okay, you know, we can walk around maybe for 10 minutes. But she's going to make sure that the majority of the time he does sit and do what he's supposed to do. Sometimes a stranger, you know, your kids, you know, they run around the house, but then they're perfect when they go by someone else's house. Or if someone else tells them something, they're going to listen to them before they listen to you. So sometimes that happens with all of us, and we just will listen to someone else. We'll take a look at them. Your parent may not be, you know, may look at them and say, this person isn't going to tell me what to do, but they may allow that person to do it. They may think that, but this person is going to say to them, this professional is going to say, come on, Joe, we have to do this. We got to get that leg up. You know, you want that leg to heal. This is what we have to do. Maybe they're going to explain it to him differently. They're going to explain it to him so that he understands what has to be done. So I hope I answered your question for you. And I'm so happy that everyone's writing in. Please continue to send me the emails. And my survival tip of the week, inflate a balloon. Inflating a balloon forces you to deep breathe. So blow up one whenever you begin to feel stressful. Sounds like fun. Blow up more than one. Okay, so I've talked again too much. If this week's show was helpful to you, please tell someone you know. We're trying to reach as many people as possible. Please tell a friend. Please tell a neighbor. Please tell a coworker. Share through your social media. I'd love it if you like me on Facebook. If you like Parents Are Hard to Raise, we would really appreciate that. And when you tell someone, they can subscribe to the show using iTunes. You can find links to the topics we just talked about in the show notes for today's episode, episode 31 at parentsarehardtoraise.org. Please continue to send me your emails and letters. I'm here to help you with anything you're struggling with. So email me at diane@parentsarehardtoraise.org. You can reach me through my website, dianeberardi.com, and follow me on Facebook at Parents Are Hard to Raise, and I tweet at Jersey Elder Care. Parents Are Hard to Raise is a Counterthink Media production. The music used in this broadcast was managed by Cosmo Music, LLC, New York, New York, under license of Broadcast Music Incorporated. Thank you so much for listening. See you again next week.